Blog Talk Radio. The following program is brought to you by Firefly Willows, LIVE.
Hi, I'm Anna Oliver.
Hi, I'm John Carosella, and this is A Shamanic Life.
Welcome to A Shamanic Life with your host, John Carosella. On today's program, our featured guest is Anna Oliver, a former interior designer who stumbled onto the shamanic path and found her calling. John will also speak with Karen Armstrong, founder of the Shamanic Life online community. Later in the show, John will talk with Sitara Martin-Jekou, painter, psychotherapist, shamanic practitioner, and musician. In spirit, muse, and song, we'll hear some of her beautiful music. Also on today's program, visionary artist Annette Wagner joins John to talk about The Vision Plan, a business plan from the heart, in the first of a multi-part series. And Gina Carosella will share The Sensory Experience, one deep dive into the world of the senses. We're not just doing shamanism, we're living it. Come along with us. It's A Shamanic Life.
Welcome to A Shamanic Life. I'm your host, John Carosella, with Karen the Magician Armstrong. Here we are.
Oh, my gosh. Hi, John.
Hey, how's it going?
Hi, everybody. Great.
So, right before we started recording, you were talking about the musical guest that we have this for the show.
Yes, Martine. I just met her over the Global Shamanic Teachers Group. Amazing.
And I'm looking forward to having her music on the show. It's got a good drive, you know, so it's got this good bass and percussion, but it's also kind of, it's definitely is trancey.
Well, exactly. I listened to it and I got goosebumps all over my body. And then I was infused with all of this energy and I started getting up and dancing and singing
yeah.
with her. It was great.
That's my favorite kind of music, is the music that just makes you get up and dance. It's terrific.
What else is there?
So it's going to be fun. It's going to be an interesting thing to share with our audience. And so what else is going on?
Well, I had this great big epiphany earlier this week, and I decided that it was time for me to really go after my dream and what I really wanted to do. I've been putting it off for the last several years, and so I have a very dear friend named John Carosella, who is not only the host of this radio show, but he helps keep me in line and accountable for the things that I really want to do. And I am going to change my life. I've been dreaming of going to Scotland to visit the home of my ancestors.
Ah.
My great-great-grandmother, she lived in Saltcote, Scotland, and I have a letter from her that says that she used to dangle her feet in the ocean in Saltcote, Scotland. And those were the days where we actually hand wrote letters to each other.
Yeah. Yeah.
We don't do that anymore.
No.
And I felt this big call in my heart and this pull to go and visit Scotland. So I'm going to go this summer.
Oh, that's great.
For about 10 weeks, yeah.
Whoa, 10 weeks. Woo.
Yeah, from the end of July to the beginning of October.
That will be a real deepening of your connection to your ancestors.
Yeah, it will.
That's great.
I believe that I'll be inspired to probably write a book, possibly sing, do some of my own music, just for fun.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm also going to go visit Chetna.
Oh, good. Who was on the show last week?
Yeah.
Or last show?
Yep. I want to go to the Chalice Well. That's in England. Mm-hmm. And I want to just travel the lands. And I've heard that many people that have gone to these sacred places in Scotland and Ireland, I've heard that people have gone and they've just gotten these big downloads.
Well, yeah.
I know that sounds a little woo-woo, but anymore, I think that downloads do happen for those of us that practice the shamanic way of life every day.
Yeah. Well, I think it's true, and I think we're at a time when, honestly, I think we're at a time when there's a lot of things that are opening. There's a lot of people that are opening, a lot of hearts and a lot of meridians are opening, and you know, it's a sensitive time. So I guess it comes down to this for me. If you feel like something is shifting or something wants to shift, and this goes for anybody and everybody, I would consider it timely to embrace that, because this is the time. We're in this place where the old way is passing away. The old models are broken and falling apart. And the only way forward is to create new ones. And the new ones have to be invented. And the inventing doesn't have to be done alone. It can be done in communion and conjunction with spirit. So, you know, everybody's life is, you know, also in the same place, potentially. It can be in the place where all those old structures are breaking down and we need to reinvent ourselves, both individually and collectively. So if you're feeling called to make a shift, like Karen is, to, you know, go to Scotland for 10 weeks.
Do it.
Say yes. You know?
Say yes. Another thing that I've learned, you know, we're always getting older. And the older we get, the more we have to really prioritize. And, you know, getting on an airplane isn't so appealing to me anymore. And what's it going to be like 10 years from now?
Right. No, that's right. Right.
It'll be less appealing. So, yeah, I've been called to go and shake up my life a little bit, because I've been in Portland a long, long time and I need a break.
Well, I think that's great stuff. I'm glad you're doing that. So, so we have some interesting things on the show, this program, including an interview with Anna Oliver. Check out Anna's website, journeyswithanna.com. Her website is so beautiful and light and open. I was so excited to interview her, because just looking at her website, I thought, wow, this lady's going to be beautiful and light and open.
Yes, her website is absolutely beautiful. In fact, when I saw it, I thought, oh, I want our website to look like that. Can I copy this? What template is this?
Yeah, I thought this similar things about the kind of energetic but clear and light that I thought, my site should look a little bit more like this too. So, it turns out that's who she is. It really comes through in the conversation, which you'll hear momentarily.
That's great. I one of the things that I love about the show, first of all, is that we get to meet these amazing people all over the place, and we get to learn ourselves how we can even become lighter and lighter and freer and freer and make it easier for us to simplify the things that we're doing.
Yep. And it's fun to be in this place where I get to talk to all these cool people, and we get to do the research on them and, you know, discover amazing new music. It's really cool.
So anyway, John, I know that you're going to edit this a little bit, but why am I feeling so nervous today? And so, I don't know. I don't feel as, I just feel like I'm worried about what people are going to think of me. I feel serious or something.
Oh, well, I don't know. It's okay to be serious. We go through these different phases of being, just because that's the nature of being human, and, you know, just roll with it. That's what I say.
Just roll with it. Well, it could also be that my cousin's memorial is tomorrow.
Oh.
Yeah, it's in Marina Del Rey, California.
Mm-hmm.
And at the beach.
Why would that make you nervous? Oh, it just makes you serious.
I think it just makes me serious and sort of in this contemplative, surrendering, quiet place.
Yeah.
You know, we were really close. She died of a sudden illness.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And they're having a memorial service for her tomorrow. And she's actually, she chose to be cremated, and she's going up in fireworks, her ashes.
Wow.
I didn't know you could do that.
Me either. But, you know, we learn a lot on this show.
Yeah. Angels in flight. And, you know, I could have taken the bus. I could have driven. I just feel like it's important for me to be here in my house and to do my own ceremony with her at the time that they're going to do the fireworks.
That's a good thing too, you know. It's if the way we honor people is really up to us, and we don't have to always participate in what the culture expects from us. As long as we operate from a place of integrity and compassion for ourselves and for the world around us.
That's what I'm coming to grips with is, you know, usually I would be the one that would be orchestrating and getting the family together and we have to go. And, you know, I found myself doing that a couple of weeks ago when I got the memorial invitation, and I just had to let go of that completely.
And how did that feel? What did that do for you and inside of you when you let go of that?
Well, it freed me up. It gave me a lot more energy to focus on what I'm doing with my own life. But it also made me realize that the family has changed, because when my father passed close to 5 years ago, it was quite daunting for my sister to organize a memorial service for him. And this time, it was different because we all just decided to honor one of our loved ones in a much different way.
Mm.
Rather than going through all the organizational stuff. I know you probably went through a little bit of that when your dad passed.
Mm. Yeah, we had a traditional funeral for my dad because he was a traditional guy, you know.
Yeah.
Well, I think, you know, I think there's, we have this, I think this has encroached in a lot of our social and cultural rites of passage, that we feel like they have to be big shows. You know, it's like look what a wedding has become. You know, like,
I'm sorry if I'm laughing, but yeah,
you know, and I think funerals too, right? You know, we have this sense that because we have all these technologies at our disposal, we have to create slideshows and we have to create, you know, memory boards, and we have to create, you know, online altars, and, you know, how about we just love one another and honor the one who's passed in ways that feel not like stress and strain for those of us who are going through it, but feel like joy and playfulness and gratitude.
Right.
You know, so light, I think...
Light a candle.
Yeah, light a candle. Right, that's it. Light a candle and tell a story. That's it. That's all you need to do.
Light a candle, write a story, tell a story. That's what I'm doing. I'm getting kind of emotional right now. I'm really missing my mom a lot.
Oh.
She's in Tennessee, and she's, you know, she just turned 80. And I can tell that she's, you know, her memory's not as good, but, you know, she called me and left a message on my voicemail this morning, and I don't know, I was just missing her. We used to do a lot of crafts together, and she's so far away, she's not just down in, you know, Los Angeles anymore.
Mm. Yeah.
Tennessee, so anyway. kind of my day.
It's a good reminder of how, you know, how in this physical world we are here only for a short while, and that there are, I don't know what you call it, impediments to our blissful experience of life, but that we have shamanic tools that allow us to reach out and into the other ways of being that can fill some of those gaps for us.
I agree. One of the reasons, one of the big reasons why this vision, this shamanic life vision, is coming to fruition is because I wanted to make sure that we all were authentic.
Yeah.
And we were just right where we were in the moment. And I think that this team is fits that bill very, very well. You know, if we can't be present and be authentic with ourselves, then we can't be that way with others.
Right.
We aren't going to be that way with others. And all I remember is having to put on my makeup before I went to work, you know, having to have the right clothes on, having to have the right, you know, handbag, having to have the right car. Well, today it's not like that at all. I am really loving who I am and where I'm going. And where I'm going sometimes is uncertain because I haven't yet gotten the call from spirit.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is my mantra is pretty similar. It's like I wake up in the morning and I say, okay, spirit, here I am. I'm showing up again. I don't know
showing
where we're
again.
Going. I don't know if it's working, but
I know,
I'm
it's,
showing
it's
up.
Just, I know.
Okay.
All right.
Well, on that note, shall we be on with the show?
Yeah, we should be on with the show anyway. How do you want it? Do you want me to sing again?
Okay. So, Karen, thanks for joining us for today's show, and we've got lots of good things coming. And if you want to reach Karen, the best way to reach Karen is, you can reach her Shamanic Life Facebook, right? Facebook.com/Shamanic Life. You can drop a note there, or you can email her at where?
Karen, KARYN, @ShamanicLife.com.
All right. So there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. And we are heading into today's show. Thanks so much for joining us.
Bye.
Life comes at you pretty fast, and you're doing the best you can. But maybe you could use a little help. Are you looking for answers or feeling a little stuck? Something nagging you that you and your doctor can't quite explain? Or maybe you're looking to enhance your game or improve your performance at work? Consider a visit with John Carosella at The Shamanist. Whether you need a little guidance or even a little miracle, John can help. Visit in person or connect by phone or Skype. Schedule a rune, oracle, or tarot reading. Experience a shamanic counseling session or a Reju Kido or shamanic healing session for body and soul. Experience more of your world and yourself. The sky's the limit when you tap into the realities that are just beyond our sight. Mention this ad and receive a special gift when you book your first session with John. For a little help, or maybe a little miracle, theshamanist.com.
Welcome to A Shamanic Life. I'm John Carosella, and with me is Anna Oliver. Anna is a psychic shamanic practitioner in Tampa, Florida. She sees clients at her office and also works with distance clients across North America, Europe, and Australia. Anna has trained with the Foundation for Shamanic Studies, founded by Dr. Michael Harner, and she specializes in power animal retrieval, soul retrieval, spiritual clearing, dream work, death walking, psychopomp, and divination. In addition to her foundation training, Anna also trains with Siberian Buryat shaman in depossession, extraction, and illumination. She teaches meditation privately and as a volunteer at a local wellness and community center. Anna co-leads a local shamanic circle that supports individual practitioners and provides collective healing to our planet. And for that, we thank you very much, Anna.
Thank you.
That collective healing part for the planet is a big deal. Do you work on the land? Do you do specific, like treatment for specific parcels of land or things like that?
We've done specific work with the land in Tampa and journeyed to the spirit of Tampa. And we have also talked about for future meetings that we will do work for different areas, maybe areas that have experienced a natural disaster, and just in general for the planet. So that's on the agenda.
Is it possible, could you share a little bit about your experience of the spirit of Tampa? Was it like,
well,
the Buccaneers?
I think I can speak about my experience.
Yeah, of course.
Which was very interesting. I hadn't journeyed to the spirit of a place before. So I did that with the group. And the spirit of Tampa was a little bit... She was funny. She called me on the carpet pretty quickly. because she was very aware of the fact that I had not always liked living in Tampa. And in fact, have, you know, planned on leaving before. So she was aware of that and kind of took me to task a little bit about it. So it was actually very funny.
Well, I think that's when you know you're getting, you know, it's the real deal, is when you get an yeah. unexpected response like that.
Yeah.
It's really something.
So, and I wasn't the only one that had that experience. There was someone else in the group that had a similar experience about that. So,
so the spirit of Tampa was calling you into your power to do the work that you needed to do there.
Yes, and to accept responsibility that for my choices in living here and things like that.
Fascinating. So, so a shamanic life is about how we live the shamanic path, not just how we do shamanism. Mm-hmm. So I want to talk a little bit about your introduction. What brought you to shamanism? How long have you been on this path?
I've been on this path, looking back, it was my whole life. I didn't know, but actively engaging in it and knowingly doing so, I would say it's been more than 4.5 years, closer to 5.
And you identify yourself as a psychic shaman. So there must be something else that's been going on in your life that's not traditionally
right.
shamanic.
I have been psychic my whole life. It runs in my family, but it wasn't something that we talked about very much in our family. And it was something that I didn't know how to control or handle very well. And so I didn't embrace it. It took me getting on this path and through my meditation practice to learn how to work with it and see that it was helpful not only for myself, but for the people that I eventually started working with.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so what drew you to the shamanic path?
What happened was I was actually in a meditation class with a teacher who is a remarkable woman who is Buddhist and also a licensed mental health counselor, very knowledgeable woman, but she had actually trained in shamanism as well with the Foundation for Shamanic Studies. And I was in meditation class, I was going on journeys, but I didn't even understand that.
Mm.
So instead of kind of quieting the mind and emptying the mind, I was going on a journey. And she was the one that broke it to me. So, thankfully,
I
had a teacher that knew that this was not an ordinary meditation experience, which I thought it was. I thought everyone was having this.
mm-hmm. And so did she encourage you to pursue the path?
No, she explained it to me and affirmed. She said, you've been looking for your spiritual path. I had been really looking into some different things. I had been looking into Buddhism and all this, and she knew it. But nothing felt like home. And then once I researched it a bit, I freaked out, thought it was weird, backed off. And then ultimately, once I started reading up and then researching and then took my first training, I knew it was coming home to something that had always been there.
Mm.
And there was no looking back. It just it just touched every part of my life.
Well, that's great, because that will make our conversation delightful. So I always want to ask, do you provide for yourself financially through this work?
Yeah, I do. Now I do. It's been a struggle, but I'm getting there. And yeah, I live a simple life, but I'm able to do it.
And so it's been a struggle because what has challenged you and what is working?
Well, ultimately, the first thing was is that when all this started, it was actually so perfect. At the very beginning of the recession, I was a very successful designer, and I got laid off, which was very common in my industry at that time, and it forced me to go through a lot of fears and to lose a way of life. And at the same time, this was beginning. So ultimately, I let go of the designer life, role, identity, and embraced this. And it is, it's slow going building a practice. And also part of that was becoming public.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a big thing for me to go public, which was, maybe a couple of years ago.
And you had to, in the process of going public, did you have to also identify that you were no longer a designer?
No, I every once in a while I'll say, oh yeah, I still do design work, but it's really here and there. It's not even, I just like to do it for my creative side, but, initially, I thought, oh, I'm going to be both.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to balance both design practice and shamanic practice. And what I indicated to Spirit is I'm happy to serve whoever shows up, whatever, if that's a design client or a shamanic client. And ultimately, the clients decided, because no one was coming to me for design work, or 95% of the people that were coming to me for shamanic work, not design. So I just took that as a sign that that's where I needed to go and where I need to serve.
So are you still in contact with the folks from your previous professional experience?
A few of them, yes.
And how do they react to your transition?
They think it's great.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. And I think that goes to our relationship and a respect for each other and a knowing each other, just knowing what the other person is truly about and accepting whatever you're going to do.
Well, so. I think that's very encouraging for our audience.
Yeah.
That you can make a transition, that you can step into the new version of who you are, let go of the past and not feel like, that's some kind of socially isolating thing to do necessarily.
Right. I did. There were people that kind of got lost along the way, but it wasn't from a rejection from me doing this work in any way. It was just more of a falling away. We didn't have the same things in common.
Right. So you didn't share things as much anymore. So you didn't hang out as much anymore.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's totally fine. We were just in different places in our lives, but there was kind of a natural, process. And I think that is common to many people going through different phases in their life, not necessarily embracing shamanism per se, but just, I think that happens.
Oh yeah. I think that's true.
Yeah.
I want to go to your website. It's, what is it?
It is www.journeyswithanna.com.
All right. Journeyswithanna.com. I'll tell you why I want to go here.
Okay.
Can't find server. Journeys with, two N's. Dagnabbit. I love your website, by the way. It's so beautiful. Was this the kind of design work that you did?
No, I actually did interiors.
You did interiors.
And I was a color specialist, yeah.
Well, you did a fine job on this one, I must say.
Thank you. Thanks.
Okay, so right on your homepage, there is a quote.
Yeah.
It's by Thomas Merton.
Oh, yes.
As if the sorrows and stupidities of the world could overwhelm me now that I realize what we all are. I wish everyone could realize this, but there is no way of telling people they are all walking around shining like the sun. Why did you pick this quote for your homepage?
Gosh, I guess I even get a little emotional just hearing it because it just, that truth of it just always rings through me. I picked it because, one, it has that effect on me, but also that's what I see. That is what I believe. That's my experience.
How does that color your experience, your engagement with the world, seeing people in that way?
It shifts everything. When you no longer take anything personally, when you can look at someone and look beyond their behavior, perhaps, something that might be construed as negative, but you can see the spark of the divine shining out of them. How can that not shift how you react to them or how you speak to them? Or even if you're not speaking or you don't engage, but how can you not just send a blessing from your heart to them?
Yeah, how can you not love and be impressed by them?
Right. And to just wish them well and accept right. wherever they are wherever they are in their life at this time.
Mm. So do you share this with your clients in some way?
Do you mean do I share?
Well, so do you share this quote with your clients for a specific purpose, or do you somehow share that you see them this way?
I think it's both. I want them to know I see them that way. I want them to know when they come to me that I am engaging with them, I'm speaking to them, I'm meeting with them and working with them from that place of non-judgment, that place of detached compassion, and holding the space for them so that they feel safe and comfortable. That they know that the space that we're creating is for sacred work.
So along those lines, is that the most common guidance that you share with your clients, or is there something that consistently your spirits engage with you to share with your clients?
It's my spirits and their spirits. But the most common a message that is conveyed, and this was one that was conveyed to me repeatedly until I got it in the beginning of my own personal practice, is that we are not alone. Mm. That is the most common. We are not alone.
And is that message, we're not alone, a message of we're not alone in this world within this reality, even if we appear to be alone, we're not? Or is it that we're not alone because there are many realities with spirits that are, you know, guiding and watching over us?
Well, I think it's both, but I think that the message, when it's conveyed in that way, that it's the main focus is on the spiritual realms, the unseen help that is there for them. I think that's the message. That is most important, is that when we do feel alone, that when we don't feel like we have a friend or a loved one that we can reach out to not despair, there are those around us that we may not be able to see, but are there loving us and supporting us.
So who comes to you? Who is drawn to you? What kind of clients?
You know, that is the thing that I find so amazing and affirming, is that it is everybody.
Mm.
It is, you know, young and old, healthy, sick. It is the wealthy, those that are struggling, you know, desperately financially. It is Christian, Buddhist, Hindu, Wiccan, even agnostic.
So why do they come?
I think they come because I think what they all share is an open mind and a real deep desire to connect to something beyond themselves, or to deepen that connection that they know is already there.
Is there a particular modality or shamanic experience that is typical or most suggested or requested?
I offer what I call just, you know, a basic shamanic journey. and that is about an hour and a half session typically for a first appointment where I explain what shamanism is and what the work entails, because I would say 90% of my clients have never done anything shamanic or maybe not even heard of it. But they came because someone referred them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And they typically do the shamanic journey. They're seeking information and guidance from mundane to significant issues. And so that's usually a good foray into the work. You can get a lot done. And that's probably the most requested type service.
And you do the journey on their behalf.
Yes.
So it's
yes.
kind of a divination journey.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
What kind of questions do they ask?
You know, there's it's a wide variety, but some very common questions are about how to deepen their spiritual connection, or are there ideas for them? Can they be helped? They're seeking guidance for their spiritual path or a type of spiritual work. You know, whether maybe they should learn Reiki or be a teacher or something. They're looking for something like that. Another common one is about relationships. Mm. Finding that life partner or dealing with a current problem in a relationship. Those are pretty, both of those are pretty frequent. And then family issues are also big. But it really runs the gamut from business to you know, whether to take a trip or some of it's really mundane things. But the most common thing that everyone is really, really curious about is who their guides are.
Why do you think that is? What are we seeking as humans when we want to make contact with the unseen and establish some kind of familiarity or intimacy with them as characters?
You know, I think it's just like any other human need for love and support and intimacy, whether it's from a family member, friend, or loved one of, you know, even a pet. You know, it's that we want that bond. This is a different kind, but people still know that it's there, and not being able to know what they look like or some characteristic or the, why they're there to help them, that particular person. You know, I think that's what it is. They want to know.
What about the human condition compels us to need this? Have you thought about that? I'm just thinking about it now based on this line of dialogue. You know, it's like, why do we need these guys? Why do we need to feel that they're there? What is it about the way we're living that makes us feel in need of connection to a fairy godmother kind of thing?
Right. Probably a sense of insecurity and fear could be part, you know, there's that side of things of wanting to feel loved and protected. And when we're feeling scared and, you know, there's those times in our lives where it's the, you know, 40 days and nights in the desert kind of, where something brings us to our knees. And we're then open to something. It could be those kinds of things, but I think people just, want to know that, that they're connected and that they're seen.
Right.
And I think that's when it's the most powerful, when I get to witness, when people realize that their guides provide some sort of evidence to them that they're truly seen. I think we all want to be seen.
Yeah, I think we all want to be seen too. So did you ever have a dark night of the soul in which your guides came to the rescue?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, many. Yeah. There's an author by the name of Martha Beck, and she has a wonderful book called Steering by Starlight. It's not a shamanic book, but she does refer to shamanism in it. But she talks about going through the ring of fire to get to the core of peace. And I feel like I've been through probably like 100 rings of fire, but know, it burned off a lot.
Yeah, well, I was going to ask, like, so what role did you experience your guides playing in as you went through these experiences, as you went through your dark night of the soul and your 40 days and 40 nights in the desert? What, yeah. What did they do for you?
Gave me a lot of times very practical, sound advice. You know, put this foot in front of the other, and this is the direction to go, and do this and that, and very, very practical, pragmatic stuff. But in other ways, when I just felt, you know, despair, overwhelmed, just doing a journey, that could be lifted so easily. I would just be flooded with such a wave of unconditional love, that it would just bring tears to my eyes. It was just so pure and left me feeling very full of that and secure. And I knew that I could get through anything. Yeah.
I think this is a really important point, because we often think of shamanism, those of us who practice it, and this is true with any kind of esoteric healing art or spiritual modality,
mm-hmm.
that it's, that it is esoteric, and that it is reserved for esoteric needs. And I think one of the things I really like about shamanism is the spirits are so practical.
Totally.
Right?
Yes.
You know, and they're like,
yes.
You know, sometimes I feel like, well, you know, we don't want to bother them with all these little things. And that's true. We don't. You know,
right.
Because we have our free agency and we have our wisdom.
Exactly.
And,
right.
You know, it's part of our walk is to figure this place out, right?
Right.
But on the other hand, if you're stuck, it doesn't matter where or how you're stuck, they're there to help.
Absolutely.
And applying yourself to that, using that technique to get guidance, is totally sensible.
I agree. Yeah. I don't know how. I look back at my old self and I have such compassion for her. I'm like, gosh, how did you get through without tapping in like this? You know?
Well, it's kind of amazing how strong we are. You know, if you look back and I think.
So resilient.
I share this with my clients too. It's like, you know, look at what you've been through.
Right.
You know, if a person with your story walked in the door and started telling you about it, how would you feel for mm-hmm. that person? And they're almost always like, oh, I would, you know, reach out. I would give her a hug. I would, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, well, okay. So that person is sitting right here with you right now. Look at what an amazing person that is.
Right.
You know, and then when we have the opportunity to access guidance from spirit, I think we get that reaffirmed that we really are special.
I was just going to say, I think that's what people feel when the guidance comes back, and it is very specific and very practical. And there's usually some key for them, and they realize, oh, you know, I am loved. I am supported. I'm seen. They really do care about me. They want me to be okay.
Yeah. Yeah. That's beautiful.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I want to take a short break and then come back and talk a little bit more about your journey in developing your practice.
Okay.
All right. So
sounds good.
We'll be right back.
We've added to our lineup of lively, thought-provoking shows. Be sure to check out The Amethyst Oracle, Divination with a Queer Twist, featuring Firefly Willow's LIVE favorite, Heisey Lutmers, and his co-host, Charlie Harrington, on the second Tuesday evening each month. More than just a call-in show, Heisey and Charlie will bring a new and unusual perspective to the power and capacities of the Tarot. Also join us for A Shamanic Life, hosted by John Carosella. On the first and third Tuesdays each month at 8 p.m., John will bring together leaders and explorers in neo-shamanism. Practical and practiced, his guests are not just doing shamanism, they're living it. And don't miss What's Your Prescription for Balance with Mildred Lynn McDonald and her co-host, Dr. Glenna Calder, the first Thursday evening of each month. They'll inspire you with the leading trends and best practices of holistic living, alternative medicine, and life coaching. This vibrant duo and their amazing guests will help you energize and balance your life from the top of your head to the tips of your toes. We're excited. Give us a listen as we continue to create new and entertaining ways for you to shine your inner light. Join us at Firefly Willows LIVE Presents for these new shows and our original Sunday morning Firefly Willows LIVE anchor shows.
Welcome back. This is A Shamanic Life. I'm your host, John Carosella, and my guest today is Anna Oliver. Anna, before the break, we were talking about practical advice that we all can get from our guides, and I wanted to ask you a little bit about how that has worked for you in stepping into your new career, right, building a practice.
Honestly, I listen to them on everything, and I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing if I had not been encouraged to do it by them. In fact, there was a level of there was a high level of resistance on my part.
Why was that?
Initially, when I got started practicing shamanism, I did it just for my personal practice. I had no intention of working with other people. That didn't even occur to me. This was for me. This was my connection with spirit.
So you saw it as a personal devotional practice.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And a way of life.
Mm-hmm.
But not a way to make a living, not as a profession in any way. That would never have occurred to me. They've made, a lot of funny jokes. When things started to get, a little hard or whatever, and they would say, well, the honeymoon period's over. We gave you 6 months, because we knew we'd hook you. But they were very totally instrumental in me working with others. I mean, first of all, when I had friends that were coming to me who knew what I was doing so I would ask them, is it okay? Is it okay to work with them? Is it okay to practice techniques I've learned in a training? And of course they said yes. And they would give me tips and guidelines and also tell me like maybe who I shouldn't work with and who I could. And then it became a point of where friends were referring friends and then friends of friends of friends.
Mm-hmm.
And again, the guides were all for it, encouraging it. Even when I wasn't, there was times I really wouldn't have chosen to do it. But because I know that they felt it was the right thing to do, I would go ahead and do it, even though I had my own resistance to it.
Right. So share some of the challenges or big learning experiences that you've had in trying to build your practice.
I would say the biggest challenge was being public. I actually, I've done my fair bit of therapy and my own personal work through the years. I know how to handle things. I know how to process stuff. And I've got a core group of people that if I need to deal with something, I know who I can work with. If something comes up personally for me to challenge, that's challenging. But there was the issue of going public, of us even speaking publicly, created such anxiety for me that it was shocking. And so I actually went to my former teacher and I did hypnotherapy on it to find out where that block was. And my guides had helped me through it, but they'd said, go see your teacher, go work with her. And through several months and baby steps, I got to the point where being public and speaking publicly, giving talks, was just, it was okay. And within a year, it was no big deal.
Mm. So a combination of guidance from spirit and hands-on work in this reality.
And I think that is, frankly, I think that's what works most of the time. Sometimes you can get it all done with spirit, and other times there's real life work with a fellow practitioner or another person that we need to embrace.
I think it just reminds me that we have to practice.
Yes.
You know, like there's
real work.
when we're trying to learn a new skill, part of the, I know this might sound odd to people, but part of the fun, part of the thrill of being in this reality is that you get to practice developing new skills. And
yes,
the act of practicing implies discomfort, because
yes,
you're not aligned with that gift or that skill until
right,
after you've worked on it, right?
Right.
You know, a friend of mine, who is he's a great coach. He coaches kids, young boys soccer.
Mm-hmm.
And he tries to make it clear to his proteges that you gotta not make fun of the other guys when they make a mistake. Like if they're trying to shoot with their left foot,
mm-hmm,
and they miss, don't make fun of them, because that's the time when they're actually learning how to shoot with their left foot. And if you make fun of them, then they're not going to do it.
That's
really...
They're
not going to learn how to do it in practice, and so then they're not going
right,
to be able to do it in the game when we need them to. So this whole idea of having the courage to fail.
Yes,
And being okay with the process of developing yourself through discomfort.
Yes.
Is part of the thrill of having a body.
Right, exactly. That has been my experience, and what I know from my own personal work and what I've seen with clients. When we are feeling really uncomfortable or even afraid, that's when we are to pay the most attention. That's when we really need to look at that and not turn away from it. So I know for myself, when I was feeling anxiety and fear about people knowing what I did, because there's a flyer up somewhere with my face and my name on it, you know, or having to speak at an event. There was some healing that needed to happen. There was something that I needed to look at within myself. Whether I followed through on that or not, there was work to be done.
Mm-hmm. Right. I was sitting there waiting to be done.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it was just the perfect opportunity.
So I imagine that you've had some pretty exciting experiences along this path.
Every day is an adventure.
Okay. Can you share any highlights? A big best five or best two experiences?
Yeah. I think in my own personal practice, there's been many, but there was one that was very, very significant, and it's tied to this, what we've been talking about, where my guides had been telling me for quite some time, showing me some possibilities of things that they would like me to consider doing. And I was at a training for the foundation. This was back in, in April, it'll be 2 years. So I was at this training almost 2 years ago, and it was actually for death and dying.
Mm-hmm.
So we had to practice our own death, and I went to the upper world in this exercise, and I got done what I was supposed to do pretty quickly, and yet our teacher just kept drumming. And so I decided just to explore with one of my guides, and we went to this very wonderful place, which they told me was called the Hall of the Ascended Masters.
Mm. That sounds like a good place to hang out every once in a while.
I thought so, yeah. I was kind of surprised I got in.
with a guest pass, I'm sure. It was just
exactly
a guest pass.
Right. So we walked in, and I looked in, and there was this beautiful meeting room with kind of a gold gate in front of it, and I was looking in, and there was all these amazing beings in there, and one of them came to me, who I've worked with before many times, and I saw him there, and he approached me, and I was embarrassed because I felt like I had interrupted something by peeking in, and he came to me and showed me what was possible for me and what he was asking me to do. And in that moment, I couldn't deny it anymore. And I totally surrendered to it, what he was asking me. And part of it was speaking publicly about this work. Mm. And I literally went down on my knees and just said, I'll do it. And he was very clear. He said, you don't have to. We'll always love and support you if you don't want to do this. We honor your free will. But, you know, we would really appreciate your help if you would do this. And, you know, when I had this moment where I was just like, you know, if Jesus is asking you to do this, how do you not do it? Yeah. So I surrendered in that moment, and I felt it. I thought I had surrendered before, but I had not. And in that moment, I knew it, and something internally shifted. So it was so significant. It was palpable. And my life was not the same from that day forward.
What was it that changed in you?
That I accepted that they wanted me to do this, and that if they wanted me to do it and I showed up, they would get me through it.
Exactly. Excellent. Yes.
It was true trust. Before, it would be like, oh, I don't know. Sure, I believe you, but, you know.
I think that's, you know, in some sense, I would say that that's the difference between faith and trust.
Yeah.
Faith is a higher risk proposition.
Yes.
Trust says, I have reason to believe, and I have some kind of assurances that this is cool.
Yeah.
That this is going to be okay. And I choose to trust this experience or this feedback or this data that I've received, this information. I choose to trust it. Whereas faith seems to be more like, well, I don't know, but I'm just going to go for it.
Right. I feel totally sure. I know that is so perfect, the way you just described that. Yes, before I think I had faith and a level of trust, but this took it to a whole different. This was just a deep knowing.
And when you have that deep knowing, yeah, you can surrender more readily, right?
Absolutely. I surrendered totally to it. And I just trusted that it would work out. And shortly after that, I had an experience where I just walked in randomly to this place, and they said, we're looking for a shaman. And, you know, we had just gotten a conversation. I said I was a practitioner, and, you know, it was just things like that. And that's when they were like, will you please come, you know, work with our clients? Will you speak to people? And I mean, that was literally like a month later. And then I got an office, and that fell into place. That was being really public. And every obstacle that I had was like this little tiny speed bump. And I wouldn't even get worried about it. I'd be like, oh, it'll work out. They'll help me. It'll work out. And it always did.
That's beautiful. That's amazing.
It was. And it was totally because I got out of the way.
Now, so any advice for how to help others get out of the way?
I think it's such a personal process. I mean, if even before that event, if you'd asked me if I had surrendered, I would have said, sure, you know, I had surrendered to that point. But that moment where, you know, I'm on my knees in the upper world, for me, that was truly when everything shifted. I don't know if there's any advice that I can give other than to do your work, connect with your team. And if you can, instead of worrying about something, even if it's an experiment, just say, you know what, I'm not going to worry about this. I'm just going to let whatever happens, happen, and know that it's perfect and trust in divine order. See what happens.
Hmm. Yeah. That's pretty powerful. It does work, too.
And that may be enough to get someone to really then truly let go. I don't know.
You know, I think the advice or the experience, sharing the experience of getting out of the way and surrendering is really fundamentally a core issue for people. And I think you're right. I think the process of doing that does turn out to be very personal.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if that is kind of one of the reasons why people seek guidance on what their life purpose is, so that they can have some sense of trust, so that they can surrender and get out of the way.
Yeah. I do see that. People want validation. Sometimes they even already have a real clear idea, and they won't even tell me. And then, you know, their guides will tell me, oh, you know, this person should be doing this and this and this. And they already knew it.
Right.
But to hear it coming, me being the messenger, then it's like it's this release. They can really trust themselves. And they can trust that connection to spirit, that knowing, that intuition that they had been picking up.
Mm.
Yeah.
That's good stuff.
It's great to see it.
Yeah. So we're just about out of time. Is there anything, any last thoughts that you want to share about your experience or advice you would like to share with our audience?
I think actually the thing that I see consistently with people is wanting to know how to get in touch with their own guides. And I really encourage my clients to do that on their own, to be empowered, to know your own intuition, what those signs are, what those feelings are in your body or whether you hear it or whatever it is, to learn it and exercise it. And I truly believe, and I get this guidance so frequently from spirit that I know this must be a big key. But I believe that meditation is so critical to this process of waking up and hooking up to spirit. To me, that's just probably the most important thing is quieting the mind. So that you can hear, so you can feel, so they can reach you.
Right, right.
Beyond chit chat of your brain.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. And if folks want to reach out to you and learn more about you or your services, what's the best way for them to do that?
My website is a great way, which is www.journeyswithanna.com.
And that's Anna with two N's. And we'll have that on the website for you folks.
And an email is also annajourneys@aol.com. That's another great way.
Great, great. All right, well, I encourage all of you to check out Anna's website. It's beautiful, and I think it shows her spirit shining through in a very delightful way. So, Anna, thank you very much for spending time with us, and really enjoyed our conversation, and I hope we'll have a chance to talk again soon.
Thank you so much, Sean. I really enjoyed it. Thank you.
A personal tarot reading can offer you insight, information, enlightenment, and empowerment along your life's path. Hi C is a professional tarot conversationalist and ritualist with over 10 years' experience. He's available for readings in a variety of formats, including parties and events. To schedule your personal tarot reading, contact Hi C at tarotbyhic.net or email him at hic@fireflywillows.com.
Welcome back. I'm John Carosella, your host for A Shamanic Life. With me today is friend and colleague, very special friend and colleague of mine, Annette Wagner. And we're going to have Annette on the show for eight or nine part series on some work that she does around the creation of a vision plan. And I want to share this with you because we're going to do some have the opportunity to walk through this process and do some exercises and so on. And the work is actually really fun and powerful. But before we get to it, I want to introduce Annette. Annette Wagner is a visionary artist, creativity coach, and a shamanic practitioner. Her paintings are portals into visionary realms, asking the viewer to shift the way they connect to this world. She paints in the contemporary symbolism style and works extensively with symbol and color. Annette is a certified instructor of the Color of Woman method developed by Shiloh Sophia McLeod. And she has a master's degree in women's spirituality with a certificate in creative expression from Sophia University. Her passion is connecting people to their innate creativity and thereby healing connections to their heart and their connections to others. She also has a background that includes over 25 years of high-tech experience and 21 patents. So you can see right there, there's a lot of creativity working inside this amazing artist. So, Annette, welcome to A Shamanic Life.
Thank you, John.
And we apparently have an audience of blue jays in the backyard, so bear with that sound as they join our conversation. So, Annette, we're going to go through the vision plan, describing the vision plan as a process, and do some exercises. But let's start with what is a vision plan?
So a vision plan is one of my most favorite exercises to do with people. I describe it as a business plan from the heart. And I think it's a way of using deep inquiry, of engaging our right and our left brains and our whole person to ask some very deep, serious questions of ourselves. Questions like, what is our passion?
Mm.
What is our legend out in the world?
Mm. Okay, so... you say it's a vision plan from the heart. No, so you said a business plan from the heart.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, how does it differ from a business plan?
So many times, and I'm sure there's folks out there in your audience who have actually created business plans, is business plans typically have things like missions and charters and strategies. And the way they're typically created, especially in corporate, is they're very half-brained, very sterile. Very logical, very analytical. Everything leads one from the other. And the organic nature of intuition and inspiration isn't always there. Sometimes it is, and sometimes it isn't.
Okay, so the nature of a... How does a business plan from the heart serve me? I mean, in other words, like, what do I get out of this thing?
So what the process draws out of you is... Something that actually I find quite amazing is many times when people engage in this, they get back answers they didn't expect, but that really, really resonate with them. They get back things that are deeper, the things that they're afraid to say in another environment or the things that they didn't connect up because they weren't approaching this with their whole person and with their heart connected.
Or perhaps that they didn't have words to express.
Yes.
Because this works through a different kind of medium as well as words, right? Not just words.
Yes, and in fact, that's why when I do this process, we both paint and write. We vision, we use symbol, we use myth, we use whatever comes, but we use things that engage both sides of our brain because when we do that and we open our heart, what comes out completely is unexpected, it's completely inspiring and motivating, and can be very satisfying in the end because suddenly you get back something you go, wow. That's my passion.
Okay, does it come down to this is a tool for navigating my heart's desire?
Absolutely.
Is that what it's about?
Yes, it's about navigating. It's about elucidating your heart's desire. Many times we're afraid to speak our heart's desire because we're going to get slapped down. There's no one's going to hear it. Or we think it's not important, or it's not good enough. Mm-hmm. So part of what I also do is create an environment, a container, a sacred container for people to be in, where we set a container, we create context, a connection, and we make it okay to go in deep into our heart and ask these questions and really hear what our heart has to say to us. And that's why it's surprising to people, is because many times it's submerged and it's hidden. But also what I find is people really are searching. They're asking, what is my purpose in this life? Why am I here? What am I supposed to be doing? And this process allows them to engage in such a way that the answers they get back are true and real and present right now in the moment. And interestingly enough, it's you do the work for your own vision plan. This isn't a case of a workshop leader leading somebody through something where I'm putting words in your mouth. This is all about creating a container and a space where somebody, where what comes out into that vision plan is completely your own creation.
Well, you know, so we've had the opportunity to work with Annette, that the Firefly Willows LIBE team actually has, we've gotten halfway through the process because we were doing it with all four of us at once trying to coalesce into one plan. But I can tell you personally, it was really, it was creatively delightful, right? You know, and also it had gravity, right? It was real. It was important stuff that was illuminated, that we brought forward. So I like it, because it feels like a genuine exercise, mm-hmm. as opposed to an analytical exercise. It feels more organic. It does.
And that's a key piece, actually, is allowing that organic nature to come into interaction with the analytical side so that something new comes from both of them.
Yeah. Okay. So I want to touch in this segment, this first segment, I want to touch a little bit on the context and structure. Can you share?
Let me start with describing a little bit about what you end up with when you create a vision plan.
Right.
You end up with something that looks like a folded book. It has 8 panels on it, 4 on each side, and each panel is really a, in each panel we ask a question, and we create images, and we add words and story to it as we work through it. And the way that we sort of do the entire process is we begin by setting context. I do a red thread ceremony to bring everyone into connection with each other. And then we start with a visioning. That's a very specific visioning of going off and meeting our muse and asking questions. It's a journey. It's a shamanic journey, although I don't always explain it that way to people. But we go off and we ask questions. We ask for gifts and messages. We bring these things back. And then we begin to create this panel one by one, asking these questions. And throughout the whole process, I maintain container and space.
Mm-hmm.
For people to be able to interact with this. And I put paintbrushes in their hands, and then I might say, okay, now it's time to pick up, you know, a marker or a pencil and add some words. And we go back and forth between engaging the right and the left brain so that we're constantly keeping both of them aware and present as we ask the questions that we need to ask. And it's usually, when I do this in a group setting, in a workshop setting, it's at least an afternoon.
Yeah.
And what you end up with is this book. And what starts to happen by the end of the day is people start getting very excited. It's like they start seeing these things coming alive on the page. And it starts to manifest already. Because when you bring this out of your heart and you put it on a piece of paper and you start to write about it, the energy becomes present in this world.
Yeah.
And when you take your book home, you put it up on an altar or you put it in a space, and I encourage people to take it home and put it somewhere where they're going to see it when they wake up in the morning or see it just as they go to bed at night.
Mm.
And what happens is it continues to manifest. And the nice thing about vision plans is while you can complete the whole thing in an afternoon, I always like to leave a little bit of organicness in there where somebody says, well, I'm going to write this much and this is how much comes through. But then when I have sat with it at home for a week or two and I want to put more words on it, I'm going to go back in and I can add more to it.
Right.
I can add found objects to it.
Oh, yeah. So do we want to talk about what those 8 panels are today?
We certainly can.
All right, let's just at least list them so that people have a sense of what's coming.
Okay. So the first panel asked the question of, what is your passion?
Okay. That seems fairly straightforward.
Yeah. It's what you're calling, what is your passion, what makes you passionate, so the conversation evolves around that. The second panel is, what is your legend? And this is a very deliberate choice of words. We're not asking what your bio is that you're going to hand in for the article or to give to John for the radio show.
Maybe I should be asking people for what their legend is.
Well, maybe you should.
Okay, so we'll learn more about what the nature of how that differs from your bio when we talk about that.
When we talk about that. The third panel is, what is your dream? And this is big overarching dream. You might be passionate about something, but you may also have a dream about how it manifests.
Okay.
Then the fourth panel on the first side is, who are my beloveds?
And I think you said this was like, kind of like, who are my customers in the business plan?
Yes.
But it's different again.
It's different because it also, using the word beloveds, changes the relationship you have with those people.
Right, right. You're looking at a different context for how you engage with them.
Yes.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
All right. And now we turn it over. And what's the other
side? Now we turn it over. And on the other side, the first panel is, what are my offerings?
Okay.
And this is literally, what am I offering out into the world?
Mm-hmm.
And it can be very practical or not. And that's something that we have a conversation about. The next panel is, how do I share my offerings? Or how am I sharing what I'm doing, my purpose, my passion? How am I sharing out into the world?
So and what is that called? How am I sharing?
Or it's called sharing.
Sharing.
You usually just put sharing on it. And because in this panel, things can be very, once again, very practical or not. And it also depends on what has come before. Because
right.
on the second four panels, many of the answers are already fed by the answers you've given to the first four questions.
Right, okay. So the order is important.
Right.
All right.
The order is important in how you go through this because they're all connected and they all feed each other.
Okay. So sharing, then what?
Abundance. And this is a huge panel.
This is the one this should be the largest panel.
Well, but there's a reason why we actually do it in the order we do it in. But abundance is a huge panel because it's not only, for many of us who do spiritual work in the world, what I call soul work, this is my soul work I do. Mm-hmm. It can be very difficult to ask for the prosperity to sustain us in doing our work.
Right, right.
So, okay. And the image I love to use on this one is the overflowing cup.
Right.
So this panel goes in and lets you have a conversation with yourself and your heart about that.
All right.
And then
finally?
The last panel is connection. And connection is about, how are you connected? How are you and your work connected out into the world? What are the circles of connection? And the way to think about this one is tribes.
Mm, right.
And community.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Because we don't do our work in isolation.
Yeah, and frankly, we do. Our culture, I think, suffers terribly from not understanding the nature of connections and tribe. We look in weird places. Because we don't, we look at our companies, right? We look at the corporation as a way of being connected,
right?
And that it's made up of people, right? I mean, there are definitely people there, but the context is not really one of connection so much as it is one of cooperative endeavor to make money.
Yes, we change the nature of corporation.
Right. Right.
It's not really a very good definition of community and connection.
Right, right. Very interesting. Okay. All right. So we're going to go delve into each of these panels on a subsequent segment. But meanwhile, if this has been intriguing enough for you out in the audience to want to participate or give it a try, you have a workshop coming up.
Yes, I do.
And that is March 23rd.
Yes, Saturday, March 23rd, and that will be an in-the-studio workshop, so it'll be a little bit more intimate. I also...
What time does it... What is it?
So the details, it starts at 1 o'clock. It usually runs till about 4:30 or 5,
okay.
Although if we run
so
over...
So it's a Saturday afternoon.
It's Saturday afternoon, basically, right. and we come and hang out in the studio.
And people can find and register for this by going to...
To my site, which is AnnetteWagnerArt.com. Mm-hmm. And if you look for workshops, and one of the listings under there will be a Garden of the Heart Visioning Your Life workshop page, right. And there's a register button on that page. You click it to go off and register.
Great. I've had the privilege and delight to participate in this kind of work with Annette, and it is really fun, but not just fun in a frivolous way. It's fun and satisfying, you know, soul satisfying work. So if it's intriguing to you, check it out. And I will be back with more from Annette in the next program. So thank you, Annette, for joining us, and we'll see you again.
Thank you.
All right. And we'll take a break, and then we'll be right back.
Is your heart a beacon filled with purpose, leading you forth on your path in passion and spirit, helping you live a life of wonder and joy? Join visionary artist Annette Wagner for an afternoon of intentional creativity, unearthing purpose and passion in your life in Garden of My Heart, Visioning Your Life. What is your calling? How will you take your work out into the world? Through this workshop, we engage our right and left brain and fully invest our dreams with intention. And our vision plan begins to manifest those dreams immediately in subtle and amazing ways. You'll be surprised. Create a business plan from the heart. Join Annette Wagner for Garden of My Heart, Visioning Your Life on Saturday, March 23rd from 10 to 5 in Mountain View, California. Register today at AnnetteWagnerArt.com under workshops. Your heart will thank you.
Welcome back. I'm John Carosella, and this is A Shamanic Life. And what we have up next is a new segment called The Sensory Experience. And for this segment, I'm joined by the amazing only daughter of mine, Gina Carosella. Gina is a writer of fantasy and an intuitive crystal worker. I think you'll find that the way she communicates through the written word is quite powerful, and that's one of the reasons why I wanted to bring the sensory experience to our audience. Each time we do the sensory experience on A Shamanic Life, Gina will be sharing one sensory experience that she has encountered in the world and shared on paper. Well, not really on paper, because her work can be found online at thesensoryexperience.tumblr.com. And her crystal work will also be findable online at crystalwisdom.tumblr.com. And that's Tumblr, T-U-M-B-L-R, tumblr.com. So welcome to the show, Gina.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Well, what sensory experience are we going to indulge ourselves in today?
Today we will be exploring fresh rosemary.
And why did you pick rosemary?
I picked rosemary partly on impulse because I know rosemary has a very strong presence. Mm. And it was something that as I started this project and began looking into really being present in an experience, I knew it was something that I would react very strongly to and would be able to explore with.
Right.
It seemed like a good first start because it's such a strong, potent smell, because it has so much depth to it, and partly because it was available and I was able to find it with relative ease.
Right. And okay, so what can you tell us about rosemary as an herb?
Well, rosemary is a common culinary herb from the Mediterranean. It's used frequently in cooking. It also is thought to enhance memory, and rosemary the symbolism of rosemary is that it stands for remembrance. It is planted on graves to mark remembering the fallen.
Oh.
It is also linked to Aphrodite and the Virgin Mary in various mythologies. The name rosemary comes from the Rose of Mary, and there's a story that when the Virgin Mary was out and about one day, she took off her lovely blue cloak and draped it over a white rosemary bush. And when she removed her cloak afterwards, all of the flowers on the rosemary bush had turned from white to blue.
Oh, And rosemary flowers are typically?
Rosemary flowers come in white, blue, purple.
Hmm. And it's really good on lamb and on roasted squash.
That it is.
I know that from personal experience. Okay, so why don't you share your sensory experience with us?
Okay, fresh rosemary. One sprig of rosemary crushed between the palms. The scent rises, lush and woody. It is rich, thick on the tongue. It curls like smoke and speaks of winter. Dig deep enough, crush the stem, and the smell turns green, sparkling with life. Delicate purple flowers, straight, springy leaves, dark and curling, hiding a soft white underbelly. The petals of the flower smell of spoilage once crushed. I pluck them and put them aside. A single leaf, crushed and torn and tattered, bruises to black. The scent lingers on my skin, sticky slick, but it is only fragrance that stains my fingers. It is warm, like Easter dinner and family around the table. Dark and dead, bright and alive. It is the smell of transition, of new life.
Hi, I'm John Carosella, host of A Shamanic Life and Convergence on Firefly Willows, LIVE. I'd like to invite you to a new monthly study series starting in April, Taking Up the Runes, Living Amidst Their Power. We live in an American-dominated world with a worldview we inherited from the British, who were, in turn, powerfully shaped by the Norse. And the power of the Norse is the power of the runes. I invite you to join me in a 12-month program to intimately study the runes. Understanding the runes, I believe, will illuminate the deeply hidden power structures and assumptions that form our contemporary world. In these times of radical change, I believe understanding the runes is essential to the successful and peaceful transformation of our world. Join me. Learn more by sending an email to me at jc@theshamanist.com. More information will be available online shortly, but for the moment, indicate your interest via email. Our plan is to meet once a month for a Sunday afternoon and understand these archetypal powers. Make no mistake, we are surrounded by them. Seeing them clearly will help us wisely incorporate them as allies instead of being at their mercy. If you're interested in learning more, email me at jc@theshamanist.com. Welcome back. I'm John Carosella, and this is A Shamanic Life. In our next segment, Spirit, Muse, and Song, I'd like to share with you the music of Sitara Martine Jerku. She's a trained clinical psychologist and psychoanalyst, a shamanic practitioner, a marvelous painter, in addition to creating this beautiful and powerful music. Martine studied with Stan Grof and became a holotropic breathwork facilitator, and then she met Michael Harner and Sandra Ingerman. And that's when, she says, her life changed completely. So the music you're about to hear is truly inspired by spirit, and I know you'll enjoy it. The track is called Gaia, and it's from her album, Songs of the Drum. Thank you. Okay, that was Gaia from the album Songs from the Drum by Sitara Martin-Jerku. And I have the pleasure of having Sitara Martin online with me now, and we're going to talk a little bit about this fantastic music and this album. Welcome, Martin.
Good evening.
So, I just discovered your music, and I'm enchanted by it. And this album in particular, so many of the songs have such a powerful driving sound. I guess that's the songs from the drum. That's for the from the drum part. Yeah?
Yeah.
Share a little bit about where this album, where this music came from for you.
This music came from a divine guidance. You know, I was then with Chris, which was my ex-partner, and he was a musical producer. And very often we would meet at his recording studio and meditate before creating music. And one day we decided to make an album. So I put myself in a very deep state of meditation, and I told him we should pick up some tarot cards, some cards of the Osho Zen tarot. I am a sannyasin. I was following many years ago, I followed Osho teaching, and I'm very I trust the Osho Zen tarot. So we picked up a few cards, and I heard that we should give our music the title of the card that we picked up. So, and the album was made at a time where we had been going through a very hard time together as a couple. And this card was a symbol of our reconciliation and of our mutual healing in the relationship. So I put myself in a deep meditation. I took my drum, and all of a sudden I was crossed by music, by singing, and I had the impression that I was not singing myself, because if in an ordinary state of consciousness I decided to sing, my voice is very weak, very poor, and I'm very shy. You know, I dare not sing like that in front of somebody, even if it was my partner. I was feeling very shy. And all of a sudden, I had goosebumps, and I'm having goosebumps talking to you.
Mm.
I was a vessel for divine force, for light, you know. And I really had the impression that I was in another dimension, and that the purpose of this singing was to put me in contact with my divine force in order to help people to reach their divine force. I don't know if my English can be very chaotic and very broken, because now I have the feeling that I'm going to another into another state of consciousness.
Stay with us, Martin.
Yeah. But I'm not a singer. I never took any singing lesson, and I have always been very shy to sing. But at that time, at this moment, you know, everything was coming through me as if it was by enchantment.
Mm.
And I could really feel the light in my body. I could feel the presence of master, of my power animals, you know. I was totally surrounded by light, and I totally trusted the process. And it was really a very healing process at that time.
Mm. That's wonderful. It's very, very wonderful, powerful music. How long did it take you to produce the album?
Oh, we did the music, the songs. You know, those 8 songs were made in a few hours.
Wow.
Know? Yeah. And we did not rehearse. I did not rehearse. And Chris recorded the music, recorded my voice. And after he did some arrangements, you know. But he arranged very little, because he wanted, even if my voice was not perfect, he didn't want to break the spiritual aspect of my voice, because he really had the feeling that divinity, or that a goddess, was singing through me, or I don't know, you know, it was not me.
Mm.
But it was me at the same time. It was me, and it was not me. But it was like a partnership with, I don't know, I could say extraterrestrial forces.
Mm.
I don't know.
Well, a partnership with spirit, for sure. That is the nature of our shamanic path, is to be in both worlds at the same time. And being in partnership with spirit.
Yeah. And I was in total joy and total bliss when I was sung, you know, when I was experiencing this state. I was in bliss.
Mm.
And in ordinary life, Chris and I, we were going through terrible moments, you know, so it was also a healing time for both of us.
Mm, fantastic. So we're going to listen now to the song entitled Prayer. Tell us a little bit about it.
So prayer is very, very important. I think it's maybe it's the most important song with guidance. Prayer is, I am Jewish. I have Jewish roots. And even if I'm in a transpersonal spiritual path, I'm still faithful to my roots. And in this song, prayer, there is some Jewish inspiration. There is an homage to my ancestors who have been burnt, you know, who have been persecuted. And it's also an homage to all the people who have been murdered, you know, because of they were not like others.
Mm.
No. Sometimes when you're different, you are persecuted, you are can be burned.
Yeah.
You know, I'm very sensitive to people who are sacrificed because they are not like others.
Yeah. Okay. So if folks want to purchase this album or get this album from you, how can they do that?
They can send me an email and I will forward them. I will send them the album.
Okay. And what's the email address they should reach you at?
mgercault@nos.fr.
Okay, so they just send you an email with a request and you'll send them something.
Yeah.
Great. All right, that's great. Martine, thank you so much. I am delighted to have made your acquaintance and I hope we have a chance to interact again.
Oh, thank you. It was a real pleasure. And I was very happy to share this adventure with you.
So we're going to listen now to prayer on our way out today. Thanks for joining us for A Shamanic Life.
Thanks for joining us on A Shamanic Life. We hope you enjoyed the show. Join us for our next episode, the third Tuesday of the month, for more with leaders and explorers of the shamanic way of living, full of thought-provoking ideas and stories from folks who aren't just doing shamanism, they're living it. Bring your own thoughts and comments to our online community at facebook.com/shamaniclife. Until next time. This program was brought to you by Firefly Willows LIVE.